Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. As we wind down towards the end of the week 7 of lockdown, it is beginning to look like there is an end in sight. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has now hinted very strongly that measures will be put into place this weekend to allow picnics, small gatherings of groups of friends and family, and even possibly the opening of pub gardens and cafes. We have patiently waited for the most part. We have adhered to the government's advice mostly, and we have behaved responsibly almost always to the social distancing instructions and to the restrictions on travel. All of us apart from Professor Niall Ferguson, of course, and his German girlfriend. The big question now will be, can we continue to be responsible, sensible and wise when it comes to the relaxing of the rules? Because the big worry that a lot of people have is that once things do get relaxed, the idiots will take over and life will become unbearably ridiculous once more and I'll have to close it all down again. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Today's major front page story has to do with the link between COVID-19 and obesity. A study by researchers at Glasgow University has discovered that patients with a body mass index of over 30 have a much higher likelihood of needing hospital treatment if they contract the virus. We'll be discussing that, amongst many other things, with Dr. Mike Smith. Plus, we want to hear from you as well, of course, the eyes and ears of the Independent Republic. What are you seeing? What are you doing? And what are you being told out there in the real world? 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll find out what the big lockdown must-haves have been as we prepare to move on out of it next week. Apparently, eggs and proper breakfasts have never been more popular. Apparently, John Lewis has run out of egg cups, believe it or not. Mark Dolan will be joining us to tell us how he's getting on. And we'll be getting more advice from our friends at Which on the subject of the scams coming your way by email. If you have any questions, please do let us know. If you've got any email scams you want to tell us about so that we can tell everybody else, please let us know about that as well. Plus, on our homeschooling slot today, we're looking up to the skies to learn how it is that planes fly. And it's got nothing to do with coronavirus, I can assure you. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, don't forget, as ever, we are live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter, so you can watch us now. Join the ever-growing throng of people who are enjoying watching this show on Twitter as well as on Facebook, as well as on YouTube. You can subscribe on YouTube and you can find all the other TV slots that we do. We put out an awful lot of videos these days. Millions and millions and millions of you are watching them over the course of the weeks and months, so thank you for that, and please do continue to do so. Coming up, though, let's talk about the latest sort of situation vis-a-vis coronavirus and vis-a-vis the medical advice. And the latest big story this morning comes from a study that's been done in Glasgow University. Double the risk of hospital for patients with obesity if they encounter this ghastly disease. Let's talk to Dr. Mike Smith, who is, of course, a regular commentator on the NHS. Dr. Mike, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
I don't suppose this has come as any great surprise to us. We've sort of known that those who have suffered worse in this crisis seem to have been either one from a particular ethnic minority, two, male, three, possibly overweight.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The news was full of it this morning. Obesity, I think, doubles the risk. And by obesity, I mean you can work it out, as you know, figuratively on the maths,
yes.
Which is quite difficult to understand in general terms. But nevertheless, you can say specifically that this person has got the sort of is obese because of the height and weight ratio.
Yes.
The other thing, of course, is the black, Asian and ethnic minority groups.
Yes.
While obesity doubles your risk, the black and minority groups, that goes up two or threefold.
Yes.
Both these groups, therefore, are more at risk of dying, and one's got to do everything one can to protect them. So undoing the lockdown, which is the best treatment we have at the moment, is the lockdown, because the vaccines are going to take time and the actual antiviral medicines are not yet ready. So the lockdown has been the treatment of choice, and that remains the treatment of choice for groups especially at risk.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say to people who argue, and I'm not one of them, by the way, that the lockdown hasn't actually made any difference, that if we hadn't locked anybody down, the numbers of people dying would have remained the same?
Well, I think they're basing their arguments on places like Sweden, which have a less dense population and a much smaller population. I mean, we have one of the most dense cities in the world, and London, and of course that's borne the brunt for that reason.
Yeah.
And had we not had lockdown, we'd have had an R number. Now, the R number is a bit complex, but I can explain it very simply. The R number, when it gets below 1, people who are infected are affecting fewer people.
Right.
And if it goes above 1, they're affecting more people. So the rate is going to rise of those infected. If it's below 1, it's going to fall. Now, ours is down at the moment to 0.7, which means that 10 people with the virus are passing it on to only 7 people, and those 7 people are going to pass it on to only about 5, and those 5 are going to pass it on to about 3.5, i.e. that's one of the reasons why it's been falling, and why it has been falling is because we've had lockdown.
Yes.
And we've therefore been keeping everybody to themselves as much as we could, especially those that are known to be infected, and that's one of the reasons why the government's testing is going to take out some of those people, those 7s and 5s and 3.5s, as I've said, so that they're not spreading it anymore, and therefore lowering that R number even more than we have at the moment.
Yes, indeed. And presumably before the lockdown, the R number was on the increase, wasn't it? So that was more of a problem, because more people than, say, if there were 10 people infected, they would infect another 20.
Yeah, that's right. And that's because, you know, the R number was above 1.
Yeah.
Once we got it down to below 1, which we did about six or so days ago, maybe 10 days ago, we got it below 1. They were saying it was something closer to 0.8, therefore 10 people would infect 8,
yes,
who would infect about 6 and so on.
Right.
And now it's down to 0.7. And so, you know, the lockdown has really had a big bang, and it was the only thing we had,
yes,
and it worked.
And as that gets lower, does it eventually get to the point where actually one person infected, in fact, doesn't infect anybody else?
Well, that's right. One person will, by the time you get very, very low, will infect, you know, 10 people might infect a half a person.
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
because this is statistics, to put it in everyday language makes it a bit of a nonsense if you don't watch it.
Right. And I ask that question, Mike, is because we are now having to think about the next stage and the next phase and how we unlock the lockdown, if you like, and what Boris Johnson's going to announce on Sunday. And presumably, the more we get close to that figure that you've just described, you know, like we know 10 people infect half a person, presumably the more we can unlock.
Yeah, absolutely. But until we get there, and I think what's going to happen initially, especially as has been suggested, you know, pubs who have got outside areas are going to be allowed to open in outside areas, keeping the distance and so on. As we do more of that, it's going to, I think, also say those that are elderly, those that are obese, those that belong to the ethnic minority groups, perhaps would do well still to distance themselves from these places for the moment. They're probably going to have to do something like that initially.
Right. So you're advocating, or you would advocate, a kind of apartheid, if you like, not about people's ethnic and minority status, but in terms of, you know, if you are one of those people who's more at risk, you're probably best not putting yourself at risk by going out any more than you are at the moment.
Yeah, well,
which is perfectly sensible, by the way. There's nothing wrong with that.
What?
Well, I'm saying there's nothing wrong with telling certain groups of people that they should be more careful.
You're not doing it on racist grounds or on the...
No, or on ageist grounds.
No, or on anti-obesity, you know, like kids that are overweight get bullied at school. You're not doing it for any of these reasons.
Right.
You're doing it to protect those groups
yes.
who are shown, typically. I may say I was... specialist in preventive medicine in my NHS career most of the time when I wasn't actually broadcasting.
Right.
And so I'm used to dealing with these figures and trying to interpret them to the population as a whole, which can be very difficult because it's based on statistics. And as you know only too well as a broadcaster, you mention the word statistics and your listener switches off before you know what's happened.
Well, exactly right. I mean, let's talk about the obesity situation, because one of the things that I would say that I have had a problem with in the past is that the definition of obesity has sometimes been, shall we say, slightly fast and loose. You know, I remember a time when you were allegedly obese if your BMI was over 25. This morning in the Times, I'm reading that they're measuring obesity as having a BMI of over 30.
Well, that's right. No, over 25. 25 to 30 is overweight. Ideal is between 20 and 25.
Yeah.
And below 20, you're beginning to wonder why the person is so thin. It's those categories. You know,
right.
Below 20, between 20 and 25 is okay. 25 to 30 is overweight. Over 30 is obese. Over 40 is, what do they call it?
Morbidly obese. Right?
Morbidly
yes.
obese, that's right.
But
the reason
I'm asking you the question is because, obviously, if there was to be some form of, not necessarily order, because the government hasn't really done that, but recommendation, if you like, that if you are obese, you should stay home, they would have to be quite careful about the definition, wouldn't they?
Well, yes, because again, you see, it's being sort of mathematical. It's confusing. It's the height in it's the weight in meters squared over the height in meters.
Right.
I've even got that wrong. You see what I mean? I mean,
this is why it's all very well saying, oh, the obese are at risk, but who is obese?
No. Yeah, well, they probably know it already because they are getting a bit on the plump side, more so than... although, again, you see, in the Times this morning, it was saying that the obese are a third of the population. Well,
right.
That's a new figure. Because
well, this is
last
what I mean.
One I had, yeah, the last one I had in my mind, it was obese were... overweight was certainly one in three, four,
yeah.
And obese were something like one in five
right.
of the population as a whole.
Yes, but this is why I'm being particularly specific here, because what I don't like is when sweeping statements are made and nobody's really ever asking the question, well, what exactly is your definition of that? And I think, in this case, we need to know specifically. I mean, you've just given a good example of how unspecific we can be, where you say, well, most people know if they're obese, if they're a bit flabby. Well, not necessarily, because, you know, people have different body types. People have different weight to height ratios. Some people are fitter than others, even though they may be overweight. I mean, we've got pictures, by the way, next to this story of Adele, being praised for losing weight, because she used to be obese and now she isn't. You know, I mean, it's a very arbitrary kind of term, it seems to me.
Yeah, well, if you want to work it out for yourself, you get your weight in kilograms,
mm-hmm.
and then you get your height in metres and multiply that by itself. So if your height in metres is 1.5 metres, 1.5 times 1.5, whatever that comes to, and that's the figure, and then your weight in kilograms, you divide the height in metres into the weight in kilograms.
You've already lost me, I'm afraid.
Well, I know, you see, that's the trouble.
But this is important, though. We know we can't
be vague about it. Well, do it slowly, Mike.
Well, let's do it. I've got a calculator here, right? So why don't we you, because I don't know what my weight is in kilograms. I haven't weighed myself for a long time.
Do I know my height in metres? Without actually doing it. I know my weight in stone.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I know. I do fall into the 20 to 25 category.
Do you?
And,
okay.
In the Times this morning, it was saying a woman who is 5'4".
Yes.
In order to therefore explain it in terms that people still think about, was... 12
see
stone.
See how difficult this is, right?
Well, I know, but anyway, if she...
All right, let me help you out here. Hang on a second. Let's get the old Dr. Google out, right?
Get 5'4" and convert that into...
So 5'4". Forgive me if you're listening to this and going, what the hell is going on? 5'4" in centimetres, right, is 162. So that's 1.62 metres, right?
Yeah, now multiply that by itself. So 1.62 times 1.62.
Okay, so 1.62 times 1.62 is 2.62. Yeah.
Now, the 12 stone, put that into kilograms.
12 stone in kilograms is, let's have a look. 12 stone in kilograms is 76 kilograms.
76. Now, you divide 2.62 into 76.
So 76 divided by 2.62, yes?
Yeah.
All right, yep. Hang on. 76 divided by 2.62 equals 29.
Yeah, well, that's just in the top of the overweight range.
So that's not obese, so she's all right, yeah. So she can go out to the pub.
Well, she's still overweight.
But this is my point. Know. You see, I mean, the reason for me demonstrating that is how difficult this is going to be.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I once did a broadcast on Radio 2, and somebody phoned in, and it was a phone-in, and somebody phoned in, and they were 6 foot six, and they weighed, I can't remember, but it was some enormous weight.
Right.
And whilst the presenter was talking, I quickly did the calculation like you've done.
Right.
And I said, well, that comes to 32, 33.
Right.
So that's in the obesity rate. I am not obese, the individual said. And
yes.
I said, well, you know, sorry, the calculation, that is how you calculate whether you're obese or not, and you fall into the obesity range.
Yes. I've had a text from somebody who says that you can use stone or kilograms. The NHS has a BMI calculator, which is a lot better than what you've just done.
Oh, yeah, no, I've got one of those, Mike, but it's not before me at the moment. And
no.
You can actually put, yeah, it works it out, you know, on the spot.
But do you see my point? I mean, I'm sorry to labour it, but you do see my point. The only reason I'm making such a fuss about this is because if there is an order to be made that says that you are in a particularly vulnerable group, therefore, you know, if you walk into a pub, somebody says to you, you're obese, I'm not serving you, go home, you know, that's when it starts to get tricky.
No, you're laughing, but that sort of thing could happen. I know, but I don't think the pub would do that. But on the other hand, the individual, it needs to be made aware that they are more at risk, and
yes.
Therefore... you know, it's just like saying to
maybe what they should open then is the gym, so that people who are obese can go to the gym and lose a bit of weight.
Well, yeah, but dieting is probably more important than the actual exercise, although exercise plays a good part.
How confident are you, Dr. Mike? We'll finish up with this, that we are kind of getting on top of this as a virus.
I'm quite confident, having seen the figures go down in the way that it was hoped that they would do based on the lockdown, and that has worked. And as I say, it was the only effective thing we had. If
yes.
we hadn't done that, and people have been very good about it. I mean, around me, where the roads are normally crowded and the park space is full, you know, all these have been quite different.
Yes.
Remarkably different. And as a result, people have been taking note. And,
I think the public have been remarkably sort of agreeable to all of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is a good thing.
Have, yeah. Yeah.
So it's good. Indeed. All right. So overall, Dr. Mike, we can have a happy day. I think we can look forward to tomorrow, VE Day, yep. Of course, a bank holiday, first time on a Friday for a long time. Dr. Mike Smith, thank you very much indeed. You see, here's the thing. I hope you don't think that I was being overly pedantic there, but I think the whole point about this exercise is that if people are going to be starting to be labelled, I think we need to know where the label begins, where the label ends, what people have rights to say, what people have rights to do. Whether or not you're overweight is a matter for you. If you are so overweight that you are in danger of dying from COVID-19, I think we need to be told. And I'm not entirely sure that this story in the Times is entirely helpful from the University of Glasgow researchers, because all they're saying is if you've got a BMI of over 30, you're obese. Well, maybe that could be true for some people, maybe not so true for others. So let's talk about it. Give me a call. 0344 499 1000 is the number. If you're overweight, are you now worried that you might be more at risk than you thought you were? This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Coming up later on in the homeschooling section, it will be particularly good if you're one of those people who's a bit unnerved is what I meant to say, by flying. Nervous of flying. People who are a bit scared of getting on a plane, get a bit anxious. We're going to have a guy who's a pilot explaining precisely how planes actually fly, which I happen to know is something that bothers people who are frightened of flying or who are terrified of flying. They just can't understand how the plane gets up in the air. So we'll get all that explained for you. And in the next hour as well, we're going to talk to Henry Hill, Assistant Editor of Conservative Home, about what he believes is going to happen next week after Boris Johnson makes his speech on Sunday afternoon. Lots of you will also get some good consumer advice from Adam French at Which about email and text scams. Let's go now, though, live to Madrid to speak to our good friend, Talk Radio's correspondent in Madrid, political correspondent as well, Rebecca Nunes. Rebecca, very good morning to you.
Hey, Hello, Mike. I've just listened to you. I'm definitely tuning up to because I'm terrified of flying.
Listening
to that.
Listen, well, we'll be explaining how the plane gets up in the air and how it stays there. Although, I have to say, I mean, I remember watching a comedian once who said, it's not that I'm terrified of flying, I'm terrified of crashing.
That is exactly my problem. It's not actually the plane, but actually thinking, oh, my God.
Yes. Well, I mean, don't worry. I mean, planes are now apparently flying backwards and forwards to Spain, so we may be able to get you back to Blighty sooner than you think.
Hopefully that will happen. But on news from Spain, the prorogation of the state of emergency was voted in favour yesterday.
OK.
This has been after an intense fight between different parties this week. So this is the fourth prorogation. So it's taking the country into its second month of state of emergency. So that is a long time. The leader of the opposition up until now had been saying he would vote in favour of the extension. In his own words back in March, he said that they could count with the opposition to fight against the pandemic. But as weeks went by, the accusations started to grow hard and the criticism against the government went escalating until yesterday they abstained. So if there is a fifth prorogation, the opposition said they will vote against it. So, but for now, we are on the state of emergency until the 24th of May.
OK. And are you similarly allowed out as you were? The last time we spoke, I think you were being told you could now go out, certainly to do exercise if you want. I saw a picture from the beaches in Barcelona where quite a lot of people were walking around. It looked like a relatively normal kind of scene in Barcelona, quite a lot of people walking not that far away from one another. What are the streets looking like now?
So from Saturday, people are allowed to go out for walks and to exercise with different time slots, as I explained last week. So, for example, I would be allowed out from 6 in the morning till 10 in the morning and from 8 at night till 11 o'clock at night. So I can go for a run. I went twice and now I can't move. honestly, it's really, really painful. I think it depends on the areas, which is one of the issues that Madrid is having. So the parks and green spaces are closed currently right now in Madrid. So what's happening is all the people are having to walk in really, really small spaces.
Right.
So what the mayor has said is that he's going to try and pedestrianise some of the streets of Madrid so people can start keeping that social distance so we don't repeat, especially during the weekend, which is when more people go out.
Right.
So people can actually respect that social distance and we're all not together, which is what we're trying to avoid.
And what about what's open and what's not open? I mean, are the hairdressers open yet? Are the cafes open? Are shops which are not food shops open?
So, as we were saying, everyone was in phase zero. So, yeah, hairdressers are open, but you have to call in. You can order food from your favourite restaurant, but you can't be inside. But what happened yesterday is most of the regions in Spain applied to move into phase one on Monday, the 11th of May.
Right.
So yesterday was the last day for the regions to apply to advance the phase. Either tomorrow or Saturday, we will know which regions will be allowed to phase one.
Mm.
The ultimate decision is made by the Ministry of Health. But this is quite curious because Madrid yesterday, we woke up with a doubt if we were going to ask to move to the next phase. As the president of the region of Madrid said that we were not prepared, especially because we didn't have enough ICU capacity. While the vice president said that Madrid was ready. So in the end, around 7 o'clock, they applied to move into the next phase with the conditions that people should wear face masks indoors and keep their social distancing. But this is contrary to what's happened, for example, in Barcelona. So Catalonia, they have admitted that they're maybe not ready to move into phase one. So only three areas of the region will have applied to move to phase one, while Barcelona has not even applied, so they will still remain on phase zero.
Okay.
So that means no terraces for Barcelona until they are to move into phase one.
Right. And obviously here, Rebecca, you'll have followed the fact that, the furlough system may be coming to an end. There's a lot of talk about reopening the economy before it collapses altogether. What are people saying about the economy in Spain? Because clearly there's not a lot of money being exchanged.
So, well, we were seeing yesterday that the European Commission spoke about more or less what would happen to Spain, and they were talking about the Spanish GDP will fall 9.4% and the unemployment will grow up to 18.9%, which is similar of the government's estimation. So we're looking at a big crisis, probably even bigger than the 2009 one. So I think people are a bit scared because now we've got obviously health crisis, but the one that's coming is an economical one. Later people are obviously have lost their jobs. A lot of people have had obviously it's called the regulatory workforce. So it is only for a time they are like unemployed, right. And then they will be employed again. But it's just you can just see everyone's a bit scared for what is coming. So actually, talking about that, big companies have started to do tests to their workers. So obviously the big companies are in a hurry to restart their economical activity and they want to do it with guarantees. Usually they use the test that detects the antibodies. Actually, I was speaking to two friends of mine. They both have this test done and it's come back negative, which right. means they haven't gone through the virus.
Yes.
But still, the Ministry of Health recommendation is for the PCR test, which is the one that tells you if you've got the virus,
yeah.
should only be done to people with symptoms,
yes.
and care work.
Yeah, because if you're trying to find out if you've got it currently, there's not much point unless you have a symptom, I don't think, in taking the test, because it really doesn't mean very much at all. Rebecca, listen, stay safe. Thank you very much indeed for the update. Rebecca Nunes reporting into us from Madrid, where things are still pretty well locked down, it has to be said, but the Spanish government looking at ways of keeping it that way for at least another couple of weeks, maybe until towards the end of May, and then we shall see. But certainly it doesn't look as though the tourism business in Spain is going to open up this season, and it's not going to be autumn before you can actually go there on holiday, because people have already started talking, by the way, about the possibility of going on holiday. Let's talk to Felix, who's in Slough. Hello, Felix.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good, same
Very
as
good.
Ever.
Excellent. Well, same as ever is good, isn't it? It's sort of, you know, it's only when it starts deteriorating that you need to worry.
Well, it's the weekends that get me. Not that I do a great deal, but it's depressing.
I'm with you.
I'm
with you because, normally speaking, weekends I spend with my children. At the moment, spending the weekend in London and not actually working is a bit of a struggle, I have to say.
Yeah, I can understand that.
You know.
Yeah, indeed.
What can I tell you? What do you want to tell me today?
Right. I mean, you talked about obesity as a risk factor.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up, I read a couple of things recently about the opposite of risk factors, things that might help you not get very sick from coronavirus.
Yeah.
First one is vitamin D. And people with darker skins generally have less than the recommended amount of vitamin D in their system because it's harder to, you get it from sunlight mainly, and you don't absorb as much.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, old people stuck inside in an old people's home will also be not have enough vitamin D.
Yeah, just because they're not outside.
Yeah, obesity stops you getting enough vitamin D. So,
how does that work? What if you're obese and you're out walking around in the sunshine? Why wouldn't you absorb vitamin D?
Well, then I guess you should. But apparently, fat cells do. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but most
good
obese
to, well, it's good
do
to know then.
Well, yeah, I don't have the article in front of me, but they're deficient. I mean, and it's a very simple, spend 15 minutes in the sun every day and sort it, or take a supplement. But this, I hope someone is looking into that possible connection.
I think they're looking at all ways of trying to minimise the effects, because clearly one of the most kind of confusing aspects of this particular virus is that it seems to affect different people at random in different ways.
Yeah, but that, there are recommended levels of vitamin D.
Sure, but I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying there's clearly other factors as well which have an impact.
Well, I'll tell you another one. Apparently, smokers are very unlikely to end up in ICU from COVID-19.
Yeah, I've heard this story. I'm not sure if it's true, but it's certainly one that's doing the rounds, because in France, they started getting very carried away with it and started all wearing nicotine patches because they thought nicotine had some role. But I don't know if that's true.
No, nor do I. But and I think that explanation is not, or you know, that possibility is not being publicised, obviously, because no one wants.
Well, it is, because you and I both know about it.
We do, but
well, we're not that. We're not that clever, you know. I don't have a secret secret channel to Downing Street. Well, you're too kind. Yeah. I can't, you know, I can't possibly comment.
Well, you are at least.
No, but I mean, it's, you know, you can find this information. I mean, one of the advantages and indeed disadvantages of the internet is that you can find all sorts of stories that will tell you that this helps, that doesn't help, this is going on, that's not going on, you know, and we have to just filter it all and try and make the best of it, you know. But all I can say is that I would not wish to give official advice to anyone to say that, you know, vitamin D and or nicotine will stop you from, you know, suffering badly of COVID-19.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm taking both.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you. You know, get the old Marlboros out and enjoy them. You might as well, just in case you get COVID-19 and that's the end of it. But at the end of the day, there are lots of people who have got lots of explanations as to what helps and what doesn't help. The fact is, nobody really knows at the moment. We still don't really know why some people are more badly affected by coronavirus than others. And of course, as soon as we do know, we will tell you.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Time to say a very good afternoon to Mr. Mark Dolan. Mark, it's been too long, I'm afraid, since I've spoken to you.
Yes, honestly, I'm feeling the impact of self-isolation. I'm not getting my MG time. But the good news is that I just have to switch on the radio and I get you on tap.
Yes, well, that's also very good. And also, if you're missing me at any time and I'm not on the radio, there's so many podcasts I'm currently doing that you can just get your teeth into all of those as well.
Well, you're all over the place, I tell you. And you know something? I actually, my poor missus, because she's very loyal and long-suffering, let's be honest about that. She'll stick me on when I'm on talk radio, which, as you know, is the fastest-growing radio station in the world. And when I get back from a shift, she does not want to hear the sound of my voice.
You see, I have the same problem. You know, I have not seen my children or indeed their mother for about 6 weeks or possibly coming up to 7 weeks, right? But when I did used to go there at the weekends, she would quite often sort of shy away from me on the grounds that she'd been listening to me, in her words, all bloody week and didn't want to hear anything else from me.
No, it's a complete nightmare. But I tell you, I mean, I'm loving this story. By the way, brilliant show today, as always.
Thank you.
I thought as a sort of, you know, support for your listeners, a bit of input, I've done my own BMI.
Yes.
It took
yours
an
is
hour
probably
and a half.
Minus 10 or something, isn't it?
Well, according to the NHS, I'm clinically dead. So,
excellent. Well, I think if you and I averaged out the two of us, maybe we would both be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Because, it'll be like one of those 90s, 80s life swap comedies.
Yes.
Where I get a bit of your body, you get a bit of mine, and we're together one healthy person.
Yes. Now, you're returning to the airwaves here, I presume, tomorrow for drive time, and then
correct,
all over the
correct
weekend as well. So you're yeah omnipresent from Friday till Sunday. But tell me, have you seen this list of lockdown must-haves, and can you now confess to be completely and utterly middle class by having had all of them?
Yeah, absolutely. I've hoovered up all of this stuff. I think I'm responsible for about 1% of UK GDP
right
in the most recent quarter. And I think the reason why is because the lockdown is not a time to go on a hunger strike. It's in relation to your BMI story earlier. I actually don't really think now's the time to go on a crash diet or give up drinking or anything.
No.
What I would say is if your budget allows it, then do what you can to get through this. And I think that's what this story tells us, Mike, is that people have, you know, bought maybe some luxury beverages, which they're going to enjoy in moderation, but it will be something that they can look forward to at some point in the week. I'll have cocktails, you know, storage boxes. That's because I'm cleaning the place out. Board games, obviously, especially if you've got kids.
Yes.
So I think, you know, people are, I mean, it looks a little luxurious. I know the essentials are sort of bread and milk and eggs, but actually it's been a long lockdown and I'm pleased to see that most of these choices look quite sensible to me.
Well, do you know, I was very much swimming in that direction last night because I got to the point where I discovered that I had a can of black-eyed peas in the cupboard, which I don't know really why I bought, because I don't normally cook anything with them. But I did a sort of impromptu kind of, you know, do-it-yourself jambalaya with it, because I thought, well, black-eyed peas is kind of Cajun, you know. I'll put some chorizo in there, I'll put a bit of paprika, a bit of chilli, and it actually tasted fantastic. It was really good. And I think using what you sort of have lying around, and I saw a great list of words which have now come into the lexicon, and one of them is quarantini. Which is basically any kind of cocktail that you make with whatever you can find in the drinks cupboard.
Well, now, listen, you, Michael, are not one for self-promotion. So
no,
let me, on your behalf, tell your audience of many millions now that MG's Kitchen, right, that
yes
recipe has got to go into your new podcast.
It's going to have to, yeah.
And actually, I think that you asked me about the stuff I've bought. You know, I've obviously made sure and to have the essentials. I find things like UHT milk fantastic because it lives in the cupboard. It
yes
means that if you get low, you can just reach for a pint or two. But, you know, once you've got the basics, I think you're looking for a little bit of luxury here and there. And I think a lot of people have done that at the moment. Like, for example, at home, when I am sort of self-isolating, as we are enjoying lunch, we're discussing what dinner is going to be, which we don't normally have the luxury of doing, of
no
course.
And of course, I mean, I'm finding, as I talk to people with families who are stuck in the house with their children, that they're eating an awful lot more food together because, of course, normally you wouldn't be doing that every single day. And the Times this morning has got a fascinating piece on the front page about the number of eggs that people are now consuming, because apparently eggs are in quite short supply. And everywhere, every time I go to a supermarket, I've tried to limit it now to going sort of once a week to get everything, rather than sort of going, you know, every couple of days to get little bits. I just get one big shop. And there's always somebody buying a whole tray of eggs. And I think to myself, have you got one of those burger vans you drive around in and just make loads of eggs for people? I mean, it just seems bizarre to have a whole tray of eggs.
Well, it is, but I think it's quite good news, Mike. I don't know what you feel about this lockdown, which, of course, is an appalling nightmare, and we wish it wasn't happening at all. And the human tragedy is, at the moment, you know, incalculable. But we do try, and we do it on talk radio, don't we, to look at the positives and stuff. And one is that I think people are gravitating to actual real food. I mean, you mentioned eggs. That
yeah
is an amazingly nutritious, complete food. You know, meat, fish, cheese. If I go to my local supermarket, that's the stuff that gets low in availability. And I've noticed that my fellow citizens are eschewing the ready meals and the jars of,
yes,
of rubbish.
Which can be no bad thing.
Well, exactly. So, and the reason why, of course, is because people do have more time, which is obviously not their choice. But if you do know that you've got the whole day ahead of you.
Oh, I think we might just have lost Mark there. It's not even 12:18. You know, we used to lose people at 12:18. It's only 12:12. Maybe there's a new curse which has come in. But here's a funny thing, right? We'll get Mark back in a second. Apparently, egg cups have come back into fashion. Now, you, probably like me, have not used an egg cup for many a long year. I mean, we used to have them when I was a kid, and your mother would make a boiled egg and you would take the top off it with a knife and then you would sort of use your spoon to dig out what was inside it. And some people liked them soft, other people liked them hard. You know, the bottom line was that you probably had an egg out of an egg cup more than, say, 3 to 4 times a week, I would say. Now, I don't even own an egg cup. And apparently, there's been such a run on egg cups that actually John Lewis has sold out of egg cups, which is kind of bizarre when you think about it. But we'll be talking to Mark Dolan very shortly when he's back. He's coming back, of course, on Friday with the Drive Time Show. Today it's Dan Wootton with the Drive Time Show from 4 o'clock. From 1 o'clock it's Ian Collins. We've got lots and lots of you to talk to as well, which we can get to very, very shortly. But the whole point of the conversation I'm having with Mark is that basically we're going to have to be ready for some form of a lessening and a relaxing of the lockdown, because at the end of the day, basically, we have been locked down for now the best part of 6.5 weeks, right? By Monday, after Boris Johnson has made his speech, it will be the 7th week. I said, well, maybe this is the 7th week. I'm not actually sure. I think this might be the 7th week. But anyway, basically what we're going to be doing is going out again. And that might be, for some people, a little bit of a problem, because in fact, you've not been used to doing that for quite some time. If you've been off work, if you've been furloughed, and you suddenly have to go back to work, is that going to be tough for you? While we're waiting to get Mark back, let's talk to Nigel, who's up in North London. Hi, Nigel.
Good afternoon to you.
Afternoon.
Interesting conversation as ever.
Yes.
I think Edwina Cowley's got all the egg cups.
Well, I mean, I can't remember the last time I ate. I mean, I may have had one in a hotel or something for breakfast, but I mean, it used to be a real kind of rite of passage, didn't it? You'd have one of those boiled eggs and you'd stick your toast in it and all of that. And I'd sort of forgotten what that was like.
Well, I'll tell you a little story. I bought an egg cup with it's got an egg, a cup, and then a little sort of curve where you can put another egg next to it,
right,
and a gravy boat.
Ooh.
For £2 each at Chiswick Car Boot Sale about 6 months ago.
Now, that's interesting, because that means presumably it was something of not an antique exactly, but something from the days gone by.
Yeah, and I tell you something, there's nothing better than pouring gravy out of a gravy boat.
I totally agree with that. You know, funnily enough, the other night I had some gravy with some cottage pie that I made, and I haven't got a gravy boat, and I thought, there's something wrong here, you know. I need to get one, because I had to make I didn't make real gravy. I have to confess, I used the granulated stuff out of a packet, you know, and poured some hot water. And I poured it into a mug and just kind of spooned it out of that. But it wasn't anywhere near as satisfying.
No, it's fun. It's fun. Look, I rang you about a couple of things. First of all, I do not understand why, because a close friend of mine, David, he mentioned this to me. So it's not my idea. It's his. Why haven't they reopened golf courses?
Well, that's a good question.
Sure, there's enough social distancing there, isn't there?
Well, there is. And I was talking to a friend of mine in Portugal the other day. They're opening golf courses in Portugal basically this week. And they've got a... are you talking about for the playing of golf or just for actual walking around?
Playing. You know, so you guys, they get around as quick as they can to get to that 19th hole. You know.
Yeah, I think so. And also, apparently, I mean, I was listening to Ian Poulter, funnily enough, the other day, talking on Talk Sport, because he's doing some kind of raffle or auction to raise money for coronavirus victims. And he was saying the golf courses in Florida have never closed.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, because, of course, two of you are 15 foot away and you're following the next two or four ahead of you, which are about 500 or 600 yards away. Also, I don't know whether tennis courts... One other point I wanted to make is in relation to the economy. I don't see why car dealerships can't open, because car sales compared to a year ago are down by 96%.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be a great idea to open up.
Well, I just wonder whether people want to buy a car, though, because, I mean, you know, it's not perhaps the one that... Well, it's not one of the things you want to do if you haven't got a great deal of money knocking around. Nigel, I can hear your line not getting better, but getting worse. So let's try and get back to Mark Dolan. Thanks for your call. I think we've got him back. Mark.
Yes, indeed. I've put a pound in the meter.
Well played.
And I it's very interesting, isn't it? And also listening to your calls as well. I mean, I'm reminded about the last big economic crisis we had, Mike, and that was, of course, the credit crunch 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And George W. Bush, at the tail end of his presidency, actually made a speech from the Rose Garden of the White House. And he said, if you want to help your country, get out and go shopping.
Mm.
And this was, of course, because of, you know, it was a huge, you know, massive issue around all of the banks. It was a global banking collapse, wasn't it?
It was.
He said, the one thing you can do is go shopping because that will keep the economy going. Now, I've done a bit of homework here on this mic. Last year, the percentage of our economy that is based on consumption, which is basically us buying and consuming things, 66.5%, right?
Right.
So, and that's not a bad thing because actually having an economy based on consumption is very efficient. It's not like heavy industries, you know. You've got retail, you've got hospitality, you've got financial services. It's actually very future-proof if you think about it. But, you know, I think these people, you know, middle class, or I'll be honest with you, I think everybody has probably stretched their finances a bit in order to buy things that have kept them going through this lockdown. And honestly, if we're going to recover, we are going to have to go shopping again.
Yes, no, I get that. But I mean, I say to people who complain that, you know, the economy has been absolutely destroyed by this, well, hang on a second, because an awful lot of people are spending an awful lot of money in supermarkets, buying an awful lot of stuff online. And some people are actually, albeit some are suffering, some people are saving money because they're not travelling to work. Some people are saving money because they're not going out in the evenings and having dinner, or they're not going out and buying, you know, big meals in McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken because they can't do it anymore. And so actually, I'm less convinced that the economy is shot. And I'm very much more optimistic than that. And I think the economy will recover, providing the government starts to lift the lockdown, as we hope they will do starting next week. I think we'll be all right.
Well, absolutely. Now that the NHS has not been overwhelmed, the focus has to be our economy. We know that. You've said it ad infinitum on your show that the back end of a prolonged lockdown is going to be death for other reasons.
Yeah.
And that's to do with, you know, terrible poverty and our public services not having any tax income with which to pay for the hospitals and schools and all the rest of it. So you are so right. We must get back to business. And I must admit, I agree with you that during the lockdown, the economy has ticked over in an awful lot of ways. I'm astonished, Mike, by how much I can get delivered to my home.
You can get almost everything delivered to your home now, can't you?
Yeah, and even sort of rather frivolous things, you know, such as a bottle of tequila or a gym equipment,
yes.
Other sorts of things like that. But, you know, that has been a very valuable thing. And ultimately, do you know what's going to happen, Mike? Businesses are going to work smarter. They're going to realise that they haven't had to have all of that office space. That might open up an opportunity for housing. We're completely, you know, sort of levelling and zeroing out the scoreboard of the British economy. And I think the trick is when we get through this, which we will, that we are very creative about what our economy looks like going forward. Very dynamic, very digital, and who knows, not immediately, but in the medium and long term, we might even be the better for it.
Well, indeed. And what about your own situation? If, in fact, we do start to see a bit of a lifting of the lockdown, are you going to struggle, do you think, to get back to where you were, for example, saying to Mrs. Dolan, well, I'm off out now and I may not be back until about 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that is going to be an issue. We've all been in each other's pockets and, you know what I mean? She's basically been able to sort of... I feel like I'm under armed guard.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, she may not want you to go back out to the Groucho Club and hang about until the early hours of the morning.
Listen, you know, I'm very committed.
Not that I'm giving anything away, obviously.
Exactly, and all the rest of those luxury venues. I mean, I do miss them. I don't know. I mean, I think that everybody, myself included, Michael, are going to be mindful about the future. It's been an economic shock, and I probably will be a little less frivolous financially than I was because, you know, like you, I'm a sort of sunny, optimistic character.
Yeah.
I'm quite entrepreneurial in spirit. But I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, you know, who knows where the next economic shock would come from. Perhaps I do need to put a bit more aside and have a little think about what is really important. I mean, what is interesting too, isn't it, Mike? You mentioned about ready meals and takeaways and all of that, is that we have sort of once again learned what is important.
Mm.
And at the beginning of the lockdown, my laptop just completely crashed and died a death.
Wow.
And I managed to get what felt at the time like the last Mac computer in the country online. You know when you go on those websites, it goes, in stock, one left.
Yes.
And you're like, I'm having that. Didn't even check the spec because obviously I can't work without a computer. I think, you know, that's what we have done, I think, is focused on the essentials and what is important. And I think that's not a bad thing for just the values of our country as a nation, that, you know, I'm all for, you know, enjoying your life and having luxuries, but it might be that we were a little overindulgent pre-pandemic.
Yes, and I think because we have had to sort of adjust ourselves and we have had to miss out on things that we used to do quite frequently. I mean, I, for example, can't imagine wanting to get back on the tube, really, at any point. Yeah. I mean, it probably will have to be the case that I do, because no doubt that His Honour, the Sadiq Khan, will put the congestion charge back on and the NCP car park will once again start charging 35 quid for me to park there. But at the moment, it's free. And I really don't want to get back on the tube.
No, that is a concern. And I mean, Boris talked about how bicycles will be the great revolution going forward. I'm not sure that's going to happen across the country, especially in rural areas. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, really.
But, you know, ultimately, I think
maybe
what
I'll
we're
get
looking
a horse.
At, Mike, well, you know, old school, very low carbon, the horses, aren't they?
Yeah.
And when
it's
it reaches
just, I don't know
a
if
mature
I get up,
vintage.
I don't think I get up the stairs, though. That's the only problem.
That is always a problem, Mike. I mean, look, funny enough, what we do need to do, and I'm hoping that, because, you know, we saw this in the Second World War, didn't we, that changes to our economy were forced upon us in our battle against Germany and our ultimate defeating of Hitler. But what happened is that the Britain post-war looked very different to what had happened because of the war, and whether that was the fact that women were working in factories, and once the war finished, then in terms of attitudes towards the role of women in society, that was like a change, you know. And a lot of those guys, our heroes, came back and found that the woman they'd married was rather unrecognizable because she now had independence, and that was a good thing, of course. And therefore, I think post-pandemic, I mean, you might get the government rethinking a lot of aspects of things, such as the taxation system. Does that need to be simplified? You know, all of the instruments of finance may well change. I mean, for example, if you look at debt, Mike, I mean, the country is going to be indebted, and it was the right thing to do to borrow our way through this crisis. But I was listening to an expert on talk radio the other day on Julia's show who said, actually, everyone's insolvent now.
Yeah.
So we might have to have a different attitude to debt and what the consequences of debt might be.
Yes, no, I think that's absolutely right. Well, listen, I should look forward to listening to you tomorrow, Mark. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Mark Dolan there talking us through his particular lockdown experience.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. I can't believe we've reached the end of very nearly another show on a Thursday, because that means tomorrow, Friday, which is VE Day, by the way. It is a bank holiday, but we will be here in the Independent Republic, because we always work bank holidays. We don't shirk from that. Why would we? And also, it's a very, very big occasion. It's the 75th anniversary of VE Day, and it was meant to be celebrated far and wide up and down the nation. But of course, because of the lockdown, that won't be happening. The Queen, however, will be making a statement later on. And Boris Johnson, I'm sure, will have something to say as well. And we'll all be having a bit of a celebration here in the studio. And coming up, we'll be starting that celebration with a bit of a beer tasting. But first, before we do any of that, let us talk to Terry Tozer, former airline pilot. He's currently writing a book on aviation safety, because it's time for our homeschooling. So get your kids around the radio and listen up, because you're going to learn how planes fly, which I think most people will find absolutely and utterly fascinating. Terry, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us and for giving the benefit of your knowledge, because it is something that people who are a little bit anxious about flying, a little bit scared of flying, and I've known many of them over the years, and one of the things they do is they look out, we're sitting at the airport, and go, it just doesn't look natural. I just can't understand how it gets up in the air. So so tell us how you get something as big as a jumbo jet to fly.
Ironically, it's actually an extremely simple process. I do understand, because when you see one of these huge aircraft taking off, it does look impossible. But basically, the aircraft wing is a carefully designed shape. The upper part of the wing is curved. The bottom part of the wing underneath is flatter.
Right.
And back in the 18th century, two Italian gentlemen discovered that if you accelerate air at a higher speed, the pressure drops.
Right.
So the air, as the wing is pushed through the air on top of the wing has to go faster to end up at the same place because of the curve. The pressure drops, and then you've got a pressure differential, low pressure above, high pressure below, and that's called lift.
Right.
And providing that wing is pushed or dragged through the air fast enough, at some point it will, the lift will exceed the weight of the aeroplane and up it goes.
Right. And I suppose there is an equation that you can work out on that basis, but for the layman and woman, does it matter how heavy the aircraft is or not really?
Well, it does, in the sense of that it's all down to speed.
Right.
And the aircraft designers and the pilots on the flight deck will have clear data. So an aircraft weighing this particular model with this particular wing design weighing, let's just say, 80 tons, once it reaches a certain speed, the lift will exceed the weight and it will take off. But in fact, if you've ever tried to hold an aircraft down, you can't.
Right. So if you had, for example, like a Tiger Moth, one of those old-fashioned, you know, a very small, much more smaller planes, which are much lighter, presumably they can take off at a reduced speed then?
Much. I mean, a very small aircraft like that, or the single-engine trainer you learn to fly in, probably will leave the ground at 50 miles an hour, something like that.
Right.
A jumbo jet at max weight, nearly 400 tons, probably needs to be doing nearly 200 miles an hour.
Right.
But either way, once the critical speed is reached, the lift is generated and up she goes.
Okay. What about the flaps? Because you see those moving about on the takeoff, but also on landing as well.
You do, yes. Well, what they do is extend that curved surface on the upper part of the wing.
Right.
So you create more lift at a lower speed.
Mm.
And that's why it's used for takeoff and landing, usually more of it at landing. And once you're airborne, you don't want the extra drag that creates. Mm. And so they can be retracted and then the aircraft accelerates. It's pretty well known, pretty well established.
Yes. So when you do take off, you get that sense, you know, I mean, I used to love watching my kids when they were quite small because they loved the fact that you were going so fast, and one of my sons in particular was fascinated by it. And then as you raise yourself into the air, you feel the kind of thrust of the engines until you reach the required height, which is usually, what, 33,000 feet or something?
Uh-huh.
And then you can let the engines sort of relax a bit. How does that work?
Well, basically, depending, you'll probably find in a busy air environment that you'll level off and then climb again and level off and climb again as the controllers control you. But once you're in the cruise, you're not climbing, you're not trying to defeat gravity to the same degree.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to reduce the thrust on the engines and use less fuel and just cruise along at the level you've decided.
Yeah.
And when you descend, obviously, you reduce the thrust altogether, probably, and you can just coast downhill almost.
Yes. Well, that's one of the things that's always slightly puzzled me as well, is that I used to fly across the Atlantic quite a lot, and coming back to London from New York, it's always, you've always got the wind behind you, and it takes less time and presumably uses less fuel. And I've always been quite surprised that something as big as an aeroplane would be that easily affected by the wind speed.
Well, if you think about it, the air is the aircraft's medium.
Yeah.
A boat on a river, if the tide is going out, if it's going with the tide, it'll go faster, won't it?
Yes.
And slower coming in.
Yes.
So the same principle exists with aircraft. And on the transatlantic example, you've nearly always got wind blowing from the US to the UK.
Yeah.
And at high levels, that wind gets very strong indeed.
Right.
And you can have winds of anything up to 200 miles an hour, so you really are going to be moving over the ground, and your flight time will be less.
Yes, because, I mean, nowadays I sometimes look on those, you know, those things on the back of the seat which tell you, you know, how fast you're going and where you are that kind of thing. And some of the speeds now that are achieved on long-haul flights are quite incredible. You know, I mean, much more than the sort of 300, 400, you know, closer up to 500 miles an hour sometimes I've seen. And, you know, is that the case, that technology has made it just much easier for planes to fly quicker?
Well, ironically, they're a bit slower than they were in the
70s,
and that's because of fuel savings.
Okay.
In the 70s, the only object was speed.
Mm.
And then, of course, we started to think about fuel consumption as that got more expensive. But nevertheless, I mean, you're going to have an aircraft, the average jet is going to be flying at around kind of three quarters or maybe more of the speed of sound.
Mm.
And, 500 miles an hour or more, I mean, there was a case recently, I think, where BA broke the transatlantic record, and they have ground speeds in the region of 800 miles an hour. That was because of a colossal jet stream.
Yeah, incredible. Absolutely amazing. What about gliders? Because gliders, of course, get towed up into the sky, don't they? And then they can just sort of swoop around on the drafts of the wind.
Yeah, I mean, gliding, I have tried it. I'm not an expert. That's down to a number of factors. Certainly very sophisticated design nowadays of the glider itself, but also the environment. Up in Aberdeen, for example, they've had gliders that have been released from a tow at 3,000 feet and have gone up to 36. And that's because they can take advantage of the airflow over the Grampian Mountains.
Okay. Right.
It depends where you are. Sometimes the heat from, you know, on a hot day, you get thermal effect, and
yes,
the gliders, the air is rising, the glider can take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I've always been in planes when there's been a kind of a crossover. I was flying back from Singapore once, and there was quite a lot of turbulence coming over from, say, I think it was the Hindu Kush we were flying over, and then we came through sort of over the airwaves of Iraq, and it was obviously a very hot part of the Middle East. And so the air, you could feel the planes just sort of almost shaking because the air temperature was very different. Similarly, when you come into Canada from the Atlantic, you know, and you actually hit the landmass, and there's almost always a bit of turbulence there.
Yeah, I mean, land heats up and cools down much faster than the water. So you will get a bigger thermal effect over land always, and, you know, hourly sometimes.
Right. And, I mean, people who do worry about flying always hate turbulence. I mean, what can you assure people about turbulence?
It's probably the least important thing to worry about.
Really?
You know, you can't dismiss it entirely. I mean, if you're not strapped in and you hit severe turbulence, you'll be thrown out of your seat and hit the ceiling.
Yes, I once sat next to someone that did that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they tell you to keep your seatbelt fastened, and that's very sensible. The aircraft are very strong, and the turbulence would need to be so extreme, your vision would be blurred before it was going to be any risk. And, you know, even then, I mean, it's just not likely to cause any kind of failure.
But it's just that moment when, particularly if the plane drops. I mean, this particular incident, I was flying from Atlanta back to New York, and the woman next to me was not wearing her seatbelt, and they just served the drinks. And it was, you know, that terrible sort of weather they get between Atlanta and New York quite a lot. It's quite a lot of wind shear. There was quite a lot of, you know, thunderstorms in the summer and that kind of thing. And we suddenly just dropped. And it felt like we dropped about 400 feet. I think I spoke to the pilot later, and he said, actually, we only dropped about 35, 40 feet. It just felt like a lot. Her head went straight through the overhead baggage container, right? And I was sitting there holding a gin and tonic. Didn't spill a drop.
Was she all right?
Her head was bleeding. She was okay, but, I mean, I think she was in shock, you know. Yeah. She was in first class, so they looked after her nicely.
Yeah, no, you can sustain quite serious neck injuries.
Yeah, I mean, literally, head just went right through it. It was incredible.
Yeah, no, not to be advised.
No, quite. Okay. Well, Terry, a pleasure as always to talk to you. Your book is on aviation safety. When's that coming out?
Well, I need to ask my agent that one. I'm still working on it, so I would think maybe the end of the year with any of that.
Yes, well, hopefully planes will be back in the air by then, because God knows when all of that's going to return to normal.
Yes, I mean, it's going to be a bit of a slow process.
I think so. Great stuff, Terry. Thank you very much indeed. Terry Tozer there giving us the lowdown on flying, how safe flying actually is. And pilots will always tell you that there's nothing to be frightened of. Turbulence notwithstanding, yes, it can be a bit hairy and it can feel a bit frightening. But actually, turbulence, as Terry said, is the least of the things to worry about when you're flying in a plane. So that was our homeschooling. We'll have more homeschooling tomorrow. As it's VE Day, we may just do it on VE Day, considering that a lot of people might need to have a bit of an education as to what we are actually celebrating.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The independent republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.